We are less than a month away from the biggest World Cup ever, right here in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. I'm Heath Pierce, former U.S. men's national team player with stops in the Bundesliga, MLS, Denmark, and Sweden. And I'm also the host of Orange Slices, sponsored by FanDuel Predicts. Orange Slices is the place to bring your World Cup memories to life. The people, the moments, and the stories that don't always make the highlight reel, but help shape everything we love about this game. Think of it as your soccer hang all summer long. Listen to Orange Slices wherever you get your podcasts.
What's good, Atlanta? This is the Blogging Dirty Podcast, where Dirty Bird is the word, if you haven't heard. I'm your host, John Bueller, lead writer for FanSided. Got an exciting show for you guys today. Some mandatory mini camps have been going on here in Flowery Branch. A few storylines have popped up here for your Atlanta Falcons. But before we begin, be sure to hit that like button, smash that subscribe button, give this thing a five-star review on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, anywhere there's podcasts. It really helps the show grow. I'm going to need you guys to lift me up today. I'm going to lift you up. Let's do this as a team blog and Dirty Bird Nation. We're at 416 subscribers as of this morning, Wednesday, June 17th. Let's get to 420. And then, you know, it's 420 somewhere. Get to 500 and beyond. Let's do this thing. Let's go. Football's back. Kind of, sort of, almost. So let's get started today with our first and 15, or our first 15. That's a false start. Definitely check that show out here. Let's get started today with our first run of the day. I'm running with this. I appreciate Kevin Stefanski being honest about James Pierce Jr.'s status with the team, statership leaders. I've had a bunch of meetings today. Kevin Stefanski being honest about James Pierce Jr.'s status shows leadership. Not necessarily to say that he was reinstated by the NFL, but you know, he returns after 4 months after being arrested for his domestic violence dispute. And again, I'm not going to touch on the ethicality or the legal situation of this. I'm just going to talk about this from a fan's perspective with regards to this team. Kevin Stefanski said that, "I think throughout every situation, you have to take in all the information available to you. Obviously, this being our mandatory portion of our program, he will do work in the weight room. He'll do individual drills. He's not going to do team settings, team period stuff yet. I just feel like with him not being here for the offseason program to date, I don't think it's fair to put him in those types of drills, but he'll be out there." He's also expressed what his expectations are for Pierce, and Pierce has received them well. Obviously, Pierce is going through like a prevention program for his arrest and everything stemming from February 7th, so a little bit over 4 months ago. What's important to understand here is it's like a prevention program. These things are going to take time. We don't know what the NFL is going to do in terms of suspension, how long he's going to be out. But I appreciate the fact that, like, Stefanski's like, "Hey, here's what's happening. Here's what I know. Here's how we're going to handle this." Just kind of a few thoughts about this that I kind of wrote down in prep for the show. This whole situation kind of makes me wonder how it would have gone had Stefanski been a first-time head coach and not a retread. I think his experience in Cleveland with this roster is going to help him have as good of a tenure in Atlanta as he possibly can. Had this have been a first-time head coach dealing with this situation, dealing with all sorts of other things that are, you know, holding the franchise back, it might be hard for that head coach to navigate. You know, somebody who's never been here, like, let's say, for example, we hired Clint Kubiak away from Seattle. He goes to the Raiders now, and he's dealing with that over there. But if he was here, or if you had another guy who's never been a head coach before in the NFL, like Jesse Minter with the Ravens, or, you know, God bless his soul, Mike LaFleur, not Matt LaFleur. I always get tripped up in my head. Mike LaFleur with the Arizona Cardinals. I'd be a little bit more dubious. I'd be a little bit more, trying to think what the word is. I would be nervous about the situation, but I think Stefanski's, I mean, this is the guy who's dealt with the Deshaun Watson mess. I mean, he's seen everything. So what difference is this? You know, one dysfunctional situation going into another. But I appreciate kind of the way that he's talking about this. I hate to say this. I didn't put this in my notes. This is kind of coming to me. There's kind of a way that he says things that kind of remind me of the good part of what makes Dan Quinn special. You know, why he had fleeting success here. Same with Washington. Great defensive coordinator with the Cowboys and the Seahawks long before that. He's not like beating around the bush. He's not trying to get around the issue. He's not being petty like Arthur Smith would do. He's not being aloof, absent-minded like Raheem Morris. He's approaching this like a football coach, like somebody who's been in this seat before. And I think that's been such an issue for, you know, this team. I get it. Morris had been a head coach in Tampa for like 3 years, but that was 15 years ago. Arthur Blank loves to hire him some guys who've never been a head coach before. Everything is a new tradition. It always starts here. There's been good things we've done. There's been a lot of bad things we've done. We don't need people learning on the fly. If a guy has a way that things work for him, I mean, Stefanski's had success. He's been able to win in Cleveland, which has proven to be the hardest place to win, arguably in the NFL. I mean, he won a playoff game. The last guy to do that was Bill Belichick back in 94. Didn't really have the internet then. The Baltimore Ravens didn't exist. This is the Blogging Dirty podcast. A couple more things I kind of have about the Pierce thing is he's here because it's mandatory. He's not going to be doing any team activities, no individual stuff. And, you know, with him being absent from the team over the last 4 months, this plays a part in him being slowly moved along here. He may have a rapport with Jeff Ulbrich and the defensive staff. He may know a lot of guys on that side of the ball as teammates, but the offensive staff's new. Kevin Stefanski wasn't here ago. Tommy Reese wasn't here ago. Matt Ryan was working for CBS. Ian Cunningham is working for the Bears. So there's a lot of moving pieces here. And I think had this situation have popped up for, you know, a head coach who'd been here for a couple of years, maybe he'd do some team stuff here. I also kind of wonder with, you know, they're dealing with incomplete information. It doesn't look like Pierce is going to go to prison, so that's great. That's great for us. But I don't necessarily know when he's going to play again. So rather than have him out there, you know, doing team stuff, taking reps away from people who may be bigger contributors to this year's team than him for the time being, with what we know, he's not taking reps away from them. And again, this guy's got a tremendous motor, very, very explosive in the backfield. He is an edge rusher. They got to build up other guys around him because, I mean, this is a guy who had 10 and a half sacks as a rookie. You know, what is one of the best rookie defensive players in the NFL a year ago? Mercurial as hell, frustrating as hell, but he's a really good player. So I appreciate the Falcons trying to work in other guys here, not necessarily as a contingency plan, but honestly because they have to. And I'm okay with this. Like, look, I'll say this to him blue in the face. As I exhale and lose my voice because it's just been a long day, so many meetings. That's why I'm coming to you guys a little bit later than normal, like an hour or so. You don't know that. I'm live for all I know, recording to you semi-live here on the show. But I guess like the big thing is when you're dealing with professional athletes, these are people. These are flawed individuals. They're not all going to have exemplary character. There's character faults that you and I and everybody else we know have. Do we point them out on the reg? Not always. It just so happens that Pierce is really good at football. So his problems, which are very serious, and let's not skate over that, they get magnified because of where he plays. Like if he was doing some line of work, he wouldn't be given this opportunity. His life, for all we know, would be over. But obviously, we've got to let the legal system play itself out. We got to see what the NFL wants to do here, and the Falcons are going to cooperate every step of the way. Well, because they have to. So that's all I got for my our first run of the day. Let's move on to our second run, which is this. Michael Penix Jr. is exactly where he needs to be in his rehabilitation from his torn ACL. Kevin Stefanski touched on this during Falcons minicamp. Stefanski said this of Penix. He's not cleared for 11-on-11, so we'll continue with that plan with what Mike has done. To date, very pleased with what the work he's put in. He's exactly where he needs to be. We'll just continue to lean on medical and Mike to continue to make good decisions in his rehabilitation. And the other big thing that Stefanski kind of said later on is like, we're not giving out any jobs in June. Look, I touched on this on the previous episode of the Blog Nerdy podcast. You can definitely check that out on YouTube and anywhere there's podcasts. You can listen to this as well. Tua's the front runner right now because he's healthy. His quarterback's coach, Alex Van Pelt, said as much. He's like, look, until Penix is healthy, this is not a quarterback competition. We can't evaluate this fairly. We know that both southpaws have a lot of talent. We know that Tua is incredibly accurate and throws a beautiful spiral. He's one of the greatest players in Alabama football history. Michael Penix Jr. has got an absolute howitzer. He can really spin it, throws the ball with as much velocity. It's in the same neighborhood as Michael Vick because he was kind of one of one there. But, I mean, we haven't had that for, like, what, 20 years? So it's been a minute. I mean, I grew up with that era of Falcons football. Obviously, it needs to improve his accuracy. But I think with this is, like, I really appreciate Stefanski handling the situation with care. What you have to remember is he's coming from a team where quarterbacks was just – a tire fire. His owner basically said, hey, we're going to pay a boatload for Deshaun Watson despite all of his legal issues from his time in Houston. They beat us out. We won it in. And that cost us Matt Ryan spending his entire career with the Falcons. And this is the Blog Nerdy podcast. But people really like Penix. There's a lot of guys on this team that are rooting for him. Hell, I mean, pretty much the entire offense went to his wedding over in the offseason back in the spring. I guess it's still technically the spring. But like he does individual stuff. He's putting other things out there, but you know, they want to make sure that Tua is ready to go week one. And they want to make sure that Trevor Siemian is ready to go and back him up whenever in lieu of Penix not being fully healthy. What I keep going back to here is I have this in my notes as well. Obviously, Tua is getting all the big reps now, but Stefanski would not have taken this job if he did not believe there could be something there with Penix. Like, he had other options out there. I don't know if he would have gotten the Giants gig, but I think he was certainly in contention for it with John Harbaugh. There were 10 teams hiring head coaches this past offseason. The Falcons were one of them. We were one of the quickest teams to do it because if we didn't get him, you know, maybe the Dolphins would have swooped in, or the Titans, or any number of teams were very interested in Kevin Stefanski. He was a sought-after commodity. People around the league knew that what he did in Cleveland was commendable. And we need commendable players, commendable coaches, commendable people here more in this organization. So it does seem as though Penix's rehab has him on track to be back week one. I think they'll keep putting that out there. That remains to be seen. Again, he tore his ACL again in like mid to late November versus the Panthers, team that he's really struggled with in his career up to this point. So even though there have been major advances in medical science, it's still a major surgery. Like you still have to go under the knife. You're still being sedated. They're still cutting something out of you. You're dealing with finicky sinew. Like this takes a long ass time to heal. You know, this is. It takes longer than a bone because there's less blood going there. That's how tendons work. But tendons and ligaments work and everything like that. But I think this is how Stefanski's playing it. It's calculated. He's like, look, he and the Falcons, Cunningham, whatever the Falcons brass have said, you know, Tua, you're going to be the starter. And he's also said, Penix, like, you can compete for the starting job. You can potentially beat him out. And as this goes along, the more and more likely it's like Tua is going to be the week one starter for us just based on Penix's health. And I mentioned this before. There's a series of if this, then that. If Penix is healthy and Penix is proven to be as good or close enough to Tua throughout competing for the starting job, then you got to start him. If he's not close and Tua is markedly better, then it's got to be Tua. And if Penix isn't healthy, then it's obviously got to be Tua. Because this is a new regime, because this is, you know, a new head coach, new offensive coordinator, new GM, new president of football, maybe we need to temper our expectations a little bit. Maybe this team is not quite a playoff team. I think it's close. I think the division's in disarray. I don't really trust Carolina's upward trajectory. I think that Tampa's trending down. New Orleans could be sneaky good, but we swept them a year ago. We have a lot of talent on our team. And so, you know, if we do win the division, maybe it's only with 9 or 10 wins. But we gotta be better. We gotta be ready for whatever comes. So I think just keeping this as close to the vest as possible is good for the Falcons, because why do we need to anoint a starter in June? We don't need to do that until July at all. We don't need to do that maybe like late August. Again, games will be played here in about 3 months, but we got to get there first. And again, Penix having not been cleared for 11-on-11 tells me that like he may have a little ways to go. But you know what? That's okay. This is an asset that the Falcons have invested heavily in. They use number 8 overall pick after paying Kirk Cousins a ton of money. Tua comes over on the cheap. The Dolphins are paying the bulk of his contract. So we're really getting him on a flyer. And again, like I've never been the biggest Tua fan in the NFL. I thought he was great at Alabama, but I thought his game had limitations in the NFL because of his size and decision-making and obviously his concussion background. But obviously I'm a root for him because I love this team and I want to see us do well. And I think, you know, if he has a redemption act here in Atlanta, then that's fantastic too. Beat my dogs there in the national championship in 2017 on 2nd and 26. Ugh, just numbers, man. Just numbers, man. So that's kind of what I got to say here about Penix. I'm okay with this. We'll probably have something Penix Tua related on every episode because we have a quarterback battle and that's how this thing goes. So let's go on to the second half of our show here with some pass. Take a slight break here while I gather my thoughts and look at my notes here for a second. There's no coffee here for the midline break, but this is where it's going to go. Okay, I'm going to pass on this. I'm going to pass on the Atlanta Falcons entertaining the idea of bringing in Brendan Sorsby. I think it's a terrible idea. Look, we are unsettled at starting quarterback. There's a lot of teams out there that have a lot better situations than we do. We've got two injury-prone left-handed quarterbacks whose stocks have been depreciated. The Dolphins gave up on Tua, and a lot of people have given up on Penix. There may be the fan base here is a little bit mixed. I think I would say that with Dirty Bird Nation, people are hoping it works out for him because, God, it would suck if he didn't. But here's what's going on with Brendan Sorsby. The former Texas Tech, Cincinnati, and Indiana quarterback no longer has any eligibility in college football for his gambling addiction. And look, if you're struggling out there with this, I sympathize with you. I empathize with you. I don't have a gambling addiction, but I empathize with people that are going through some stuff. Life's hard, man. And look, he's really got some serious issues. He's betting over $90,000 on stuff over the course of 3 years. A lot of it underage. Like he was betting on Indiana Hoosiers football when they weren't very good before he was 21 years old. So he's entering the supplemental draft. We haven't had a guy enter the supplemental draft, I believe, since 2019. The last guy of note to have success out of the supplemental draft was Josh Gordon, but he had like one really good year with the Browns and just kind of couldn't keep his stuff together in the NFL or out of Baylor. What a waste of talent. Really sucks for him. But Sorsby could really spin it. There was aspects of his game that I liked. Honestly, I look at him as a slightly better version of, you know, Zach Wilson, J.J. McCarthy, kind of in that vein. Obviously, nobody thinks anything of Zach Wilson anymore. And I'm the biggest J.J. McCarthy critic of all time. I do think Sorsby can play in this league. I think had he been able to play his senior year at Texas Tech after transferring over from Cincinnati, that he could have been a first-round pick. The Red Raiders could be a playoff team this year again. We'll see what happens. I'll touch more on that on Fall Start if you love my college football takes. I'll have that show out there on Thursday evening as I fly solo like a cup once again with Cody Williams, content director, fansided.com, over in Norway with the NC State podcast. God, I love my Bueller jargonies, don't you? Anyway, the Falcons shouldn't bring Sorsby in for a multitude of reasons. The optics of taking a player who bet on games his team played in would be awful for anyone, especially a new regime. Like, how many organizations out there have a head coach who just carries so much gravitas where they can kind of do whatever they want. Not many. I mean, Andy Reid could probably do this with Kansas City, but they also kind of bring in a lot of bad seeds there with the Chiefs anyway. That's just part of why players love him, or he'll be open to anybody, but he's got some skeletons in his closet too. John Harbaugh is no longer in Baltimore. He's in New York. This is your one for him there at East Rutherford. Mike Tomlin's not in Pittsburgh anymore. He's doing TV. So, and Bill Belichick's entering year two, doing the college thing at Chapel Hill for North Carolina. Like, you need to be a head coach of that caliber to kind of welcome him in. I thought that, like, you know, I'm throwing this team out there. Maybe the Cardinals could take a flyer on Sorsby. You know, they're in a contract dispute, or we're with one with Jacoby Brissett. They use a third round pick on Carson Beck. So maybe they could look there. Some people mentioned Sorsby because, like, look, Tua, you got Tua for dirt cheap. It's only going to really cost you like a fourth round pick, probably. Who are you really bidding with? And then, you know, Penix is entering year three. We still don't really know what he is. Maybe it doesn't work out with him. But again, like, Atlanta just can't take the risk of this. This is not a franchise that I think can handle more than it can handle. It can barely handle what's on its plate. Most of the time it can't do that. That's why we don't make the playoffs right now. And I think because, like, there's some hope in what Penix could do, this makes the chances of taking him even murkier. Like, if you were in a spot where, like, you didn't have anything, you have the worst quarterback situation in the NFL, maybe we still do, but there's no certainty here. With Tua, we kind of know what he is. A borderline Pro Bowl player when it's good, an injury liability when he's not, and will not be the best leader in front of the podium because I don't think he's very smart. Penix, great leader, can really spin it, not super accurate, incredibly injury prone, doesn't like to run. So we're kind of dealing with that. So let's bring in a guy who's a degenerate gambler, who's got major issues with that. Now on his way out, he just threw Cincinnati under the bus. He's like, you know, Cincinnati knew about this for years and didn't do anything. Like, he used to bet on balls and strikes going to Reds games. Like, you got problems with this. I don't know who enabled him here. I hope he gets the help that he does, and hopefully he can figure this out. But, like, this is – you know, we had a guy bet on games here too, Calvin Ridley. You know, in a COVID world, his career hasn't been the same coming out of Alabama. Was a guy that we thought could be the bridge after Julio Jones kind of declined. I mean, he's my age. People turn 30. They lose it physically. You're looking at him right here. But you can't bring this on. You got to have a franchise that, like, can handle this sort of stuff. That I mean, everyone's got some sort of baggage, red tape, less desirable things kind of going for them. Again, I mentioned this before with Pierce, like, not all these people are saints. There's a lot of sinners here and in your workplace and everywhere else. It's just the nature of the world, man. But I don't know. We can't bring him in here because even though Stefanski, I think, could handle bringing in a quarterback with some baggage, this team's not settled enough yet to handle another distraction. More importantly, you don't want to have a backup quarterback be a distraction. Like the Tim Tebow effect. It's not what you need as a franchise. We just can't do that. So I hope he's able to continue his football career. He may have to go to the UFL. He may have to go to Canada. I don't know. It's just a crummy situation all the way around. But I don't think the Atlanta Falcons are going to, you know, invest a nanosecond in thinking that he could be a solution for them. And on that note, let's get out of here with some punts, something that I'm not entirely sure of. The Wanya Morris trade might only be for depth, but we shall see. So the Atlanta Falcons last week traded for the offensive tackle with the Kansas City Chiefs. He comes over with alongside a 2027 seventh round pick in exchange for a sixth round pick. Morris primarily backed up Jawan Taylor in Kansas City last year, who is now also a member of the Falcons. Morris played at Grayson, a powerhouse up here in Gwinnett County. He also played his college football split between Tennessee and Oklahoma. This kind of feels like a move to help offset Caleb McGarry retiring and Storm Norton being placed on injury reserve. In a way, like, we'll see what happens here. I mean, I've always kind of been I'm not going to say I'm on Jawan Taylor Island. I knew what he was at Florida, and I knew what he was at Jacksonville. Obviously, going to the Chiefs kind of puts him under a little bit more pressure than he probably wanted. A little bit bigger fishbowl, kind of thing here. So he coming to Atlanta will help him. Being back in the Southeast will probably help him too. Morris being a local product, playing for the Grayson Rams, I think, you know, this is a good – he's probably excited to be coming here. But I also kind of think that, like, you know, having been in the same room with Taylor leads to believe that they probably have, you know, like, a rapport. They probably help each other out, study, and things of that nature. I also kind of think that, you know, this is a guy that was really well sought of prospect, you know, in the transfer portal for Oklahoma and certainly with Tennessee. But Andy Reid's teams have had issues along the offensive line for a while. That's kind of why it played a part and like why they make the playoffs a year ago. Atlanta's been honestly better comparatively than the Chiefs. And again, I don't have any data to really back that up, but I haven't felt the offensive line's just been a wet paper bag. There have been guys here that have been good. Obviously, Chris Lindstrom's the best guard in football. Jake Matthews is an absolute stud at left tackle. And then, you know, you're dealing with Elijah Wilkinson's now gone as well at right tackle after, you know, burning a bridge here with the Falcons. He tried his ass off. That was a really tough spot for him. I mean, he was third in the depth chart before the season started. Obviously, you know, Matthew Bergeron needs to continue to grow there, you know, at left guard. And then Ryan Neuzel, the same at center as well. So the offensive line kind of needs to come together. It doesn't help the fact that we have two injury-prone quarterbacks under center. One of them's not back from injury yet. And then you got Trevor Siemian, who was a really good quarterback for Northwestern, has had some success here in the NFL, relatively speaking. Give him credit for being able to stick around the league for as long as he can with not the best talent. Shows his football savvy. I think having him in the room is pretty good. Definitely more so than Easton Stick, I think, last year. But you know, as I look here with Morris coming over, this is another guy that I think this plays into what Ian Cunningham wants to do, kind of like, you know, buy low. I mean, yeah, you're moving a pick around. You're picking up a pick and you're moving, like, you're getting a player and you're switching a pick. Like, okay, you're not, like, losing a whole hell of a lot. The Chiefs kind of wanted to move on from him. Also, keep in mind that not only does Stefanski coach the AFC, but Ian Cunningham is a former offensive lineman out of Virginia. I think he probably knows how to evaluate that position a little bit better. And again, I think it's interesting. The last two GMs the Falcons have had with Terry Fontenot and Thomas Dimitroff, both former defensive backs. So they kind of view the game that way. I think having a guy who looks more like where the game is being decided at the line of scrimmage, I think that could be to our advantage as well. But again, this may only be for depth, but we shall see. Let's be optimistic here. Welcome home, Wanya. We're glad to have you. And on that note, this was episode 97 of the Blogging Dirty Podcast. You can follow me, John Bueller, on Twitter at X at Bueller118. You can follow along with the show on YouTube at Blogging Dirty FS. You can follow along on X at Blogging Dirty. Be sure to like, rate, listen, subscribe, review on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, anywhere there's podcasts. It really helps the show grow. Give this thing a 5-star review. Tell all your friends about it. The more subscribers we get, the more engagement we get, the more shows I can do, the more Minute Media and Fanside will invest in me. God knows we all want people to believe in us here a little more every day. Hope you guys are enjoying the summer. Hope you're enjoying spending some quality time with your friends and family. Enjoying the good weather. I mean, it's raining every day here in Georgia. It's super humid. And hope you enjoy the World Cup here, too. I mean, this last time this happened here in the States was in 94. Atlanta wasn't part of it. It's a huge part of it now. Very excited about what's going on here in the wonderful world of sports. Once again, thanks for listening. And this is the Blogging Dirty Podcast.